What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 112, Making a Difference as a Young Professional, recorded September 24th, 2014. Our guests this week are Mike Hopper from Bishop Lynch High School in Dallas, Texas. He's been in the profession for almost 4 years. And then Brett McQueen, the CEO of Lightning Performance Solutions, LLC. And he's been in the profession for about 3.5 years, so they are relatively new in the profession. Then we also had Dr. Josh Yellen from the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program and two of his MAT students, Nicole Kasha and Will Ryan. And Will Ryan, they're joining us. So as they are about to enter as young professionals, it's a great opportunity for both Brett and Mike to kind of share some of their experience with these up-and-coming people who are probably going to take their place in SWATA and all those other things like that. So I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. With me today is Jose,
Adrian,
Shakira,
Abby,
and then go ahead and Nicole, introduce yourself.
Nicole,
Dr. Josh Ellen,
Will Ryan,
Olivia,
Jess,
and Jess. All right, if you want to join the conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. If you're trying to get the CEUs, you got to make sure you register on where it says CEU live event. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. On Twitter, I think my phone's vibrating. Maybe somebody's tweeting me now using the hashtag VSMB. Bob is searching that. Adrian's looking at Ustream, which is kind of a backup live show there. The YouTube link that's live on the homepage of Sports Medicine Broadcast, that's just for people like my wife that just want to watch it, or Dr. Yellen's daughter who may have watched last week because she was sick at home, and we give her a shout-out. So if you're going to want the CEU credits, you got to make sure you log in there. All right, without much further ado, we talked just a little bit to Brett and to Mike about where they were. Dr. Yellen was talking to them a second ago, but we're going to go ahead and start off with Jess.
Mr. Hopper, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Mike Hopper. I am the head athletic trainer here at Bishop Lynch High School, right outside of Dallas, Texas. I just moved into this position August 4th of this year. I came from Southern Illinois. I worked for a PT clinic in Southern Illinois for about 3.5 years prior to that. I did my undergrad work at Southeast Missouri State University in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Got a bachelor's in health management with a specialization in athletic training. And then in 2012, I started my master's. Did my master's through the University of South Florida in Tampa, Florida. It was an online program, medical sciences with a concentration in pediatric sports medicine.
And what about you, Mr. McQueen?
Well, currently I'm the CEO and owner of Lightning Performance Solutions, and that's a company I started doing consulting in athletic training and private work in performance enhancement and injury prevention for tactical, high school, recreational, and collegiate athletes. I got my bachelor's degree in athletic training at Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri in 2011, and did my master's in kinesiology at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, where I graduated in 2013. And 3 days after defending my thesis, I started my doctorate in health sciences and athletic training with Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions, and I'm almost done with didactic coursework in that degree. So
that means you'll be ABD.
That means I will be ABD in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What does that abbreviation mean?
All but dissertation. Yeah, so he gets through all the coursework. And it's really interesting about Rocky Mountain University. It's a DSC, Doctor of Science in Athletic Training. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rocky Mountain was really the lead in throwing up programs like the DAT now that we see at, I think it's Idaho, right? Idaho? And then there's another one at A.T. Still University.
Yeah, A.T. Still is I'm not sure if it's the DAT or the health science as well.
Yeah, it's a DAT. I think the vice president of CADI, Dr. Sowers, he's the director of that program.
Okay.
So, yeah, Rocky Mountain's got a great reputation. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Hopper, in what ways are you currently impacting athletic training?
So, right now, you know, like I said, I just moved into a new role. So I'm learning a lot. since I'm here now in Texas instead of Illinois like I was. So that's changed quite a bit. I am teaching a sports medicine class. So I have sophomores through seniors in my class right now. So that's probably the biggest thing of what I'm doing. But, I'm not too active in the profession at the national level at the moment, or at the state level, just because I'm trying to figure out what's here at home first. But I'm still active on Twitter, so that's where it comes out at.
All right, so I think it was you, Mike. It was either Mike or Brett, one of you two. Did y'all know David Gish, who was the SWATA president that just recently passed?
Yes, I did.
I did not, no.
Brett?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so I know one of you had retweeted something about, you know, his passing or something like that. And I knew with Mike being new to the area, I didn't know if you had a chance to meet him. I knew Brett, since you're kind of from the Texas area, kind of been in and out of the Texas area, I guess. Or SWATA,
yes.
What, Texas, yeah, Arkansas.
The passing of David, that's a big loss to the profession. And
absolutely.
I know a big loss to Texas State. We wish David's family, you know, just strength and healing, and of course all the love from the entire profession. So let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. Sorry to interrupt your line of question. I think I did this to you guys last week too. Mike, you know, you come in from another state, and you know, you're practicing in Texas as an athletic trainer. Can you elaborate a little bit more? Because, you know, I've got my story in that, you know, I came in last year. I had to sit for the state board because I had passed the BOC before 2003. And so can you elaborate a little bit more about your experience in coming in from out of state into Texas and some of the things that you had to understand and get used to and get infused?
Well, okay. So, you know, the biggest frustration for me initially was getting people to call. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, and I've told people here at BL, I applied for over 75 jobs across the country in the last 6 months, you know, all over, like in 15 or 16 different states. But the problem was, you know, I didn't necessarily know anybody. And so I knew a couple people here in the Dallas area, but, you know, nobody well enough to say, hey, we need to talk with him, you know, that sort of a thing. And I think we all understand that our profession is that tight that, you know, you tend to hire people that you know. And so I was lucky enough to get one of those breaks. Many of us probably know the name Dennis Hart. Mm. You know, I met him. I've emailed back and forth with him for the last few months. And, I was at National Convention in Indianapolis this year when I was talking actually with Christy Messina, who's here at Rockwall Heath, who Jeremy tried to get to join us today, but that couldn't work. But she told me that Dennis was at convention and that Mike Carroll was at convention. Mm-hmm. And Mike was someone that I knew online for a while. And I told her, I said, I have to meet both of them. You know, it was just that simple. And so, we talked and the next week things really started rolling here, really with this Bishop Lynch position. And so the biggest thing that I think held us all back at that point was getting licensed.
Uh-huh.
You know, and just getting that all done, because I told them, I said, I'm applying in 17 different states. I can't go out and get a license in all 17 states and be able to just walk right into a job.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, I actually had a couple people tell me that their school wouldn't even consider me because I was not already state licensed and I wasn't, you know, a certified teacher or whatever the case may be.
And that was all in Texas, or that was across the country?
That was all in Texas. Mm-hmm. It was all in Texas. That's where most of my leads actually went. Mm-hmm. But once I did get hired, and that moved very quickly, I was hired on a Tuesday and I started work Monday morning, very early Monday morning.
And when did you pass your national certification?
National certification would have been in December of 2010.
Okay, so when you came to Texas, you had to fill out some paperwork.
And I filled out paperwork for to reciprocate my Illinois license.
Right.
Because I practiced in Illinois for 3.5 years.
Right. So anybody that's not familiar with the process, right, and this is a good lesson for the MAT students and all the high school students here, is that Texas is really unique in terms of its state licensure in that it had a state licensure before the nation had a national certification. And so Texas has not yet relinquished that independent state licensure. So they made some changes to the state law that if you were, and this coincided with the CADI changes, et cetera, educational changes. So if you were state licensed, or rather if you were board certified 2003 or before, you have to sit for the Texas state licensure. If you were board certified 2004 or after, because that's when CADI had implemented all of its different educational changes and accreditation, then you did exactly what Mike did in that you filled out some paperwork and you did a reciprocal license and you don't have to sit for the state exam. So those are two things that people that are coming into Texas and want to get involved, those are a couple things that people have to remember.
Yeah, and I actually got my initial license in Texas, and it was simply a matter of providing my BOC certification number. Mm-hmm. After passing that test, and it was a really easy process, much easier than some of the other states I've looked at.
Yeah, I've practiced in 3 states: California, Louisiana, Texas.
How's that California license?
Well, they don't have it. You know, and that brings up a really interesting, you know, right now from a national perspective, we have, you know, the president of the NATA, right? We have that election going on. And one of the candidates is Scott Saylor, who is the president of the Far West Athletic Trainer Association out of California, Nevada, Hawaii. So it's going to be really interesting to see that voting process and those decision-making processes, et cetera. And I'm disappointed that California is the only state in the entire country that doesn't have some sort of state law advocating for athletic training.
It was up for vote again. It was recently.
Yeah, like the governor said no.
Yep, and they voted it down again.
Yeah, governor said no.
He said that was an undue burden.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, yay, California. So. All right, back to the subject. Sorry.
And what about you, Mr. McQueen? What ways are you currently impacting athletic training?
Well, I'm trying to impact it as best I can with as few resources as possible, as many of us athletic trainers are well used to, doing more things with fewer resources. Currently, I'm working on some different research avenues, trying to increase the body of knowledge in various movement sciences and evaluation techniques, as well as critically evaluating a lot of the research that's out there on common practices within athletic training. You know, we're constantly asked to do, as I stated, more with less. And we really need to look at the science and the anecdotal evidence of what's really giving us the best bang for our buck. I'm actually working on a presentation right now to submit to District 5 in the District 5 meeting in March on looking at whether or not the ankle taping and bracing is potentially causing more injuries than it's saving. Mm-hmm. Most of the evidence that's out there right now suggests that it is largely ineffective. And so just trying to look at what's the best thing to do for our kids, because I don't believe in doing the same thing that we've done for years if it's not really helping us. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Can you go back real quick, right? I've got 2 entry-level MAT students that just passed some clinical proficiency tests where they can now be in the athletic training room taping ankles. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? What's some of the evidence? You know, they're also in a research class, so they are knee-deep in evidence and clinical proficiencies. So can you talk about some of the evidence that you've seen about why ankle taping may not be as good as we think it is?
So, first is simply cost. And if you look at the sheer cost of putting all that tape and bracing on people, do you really prevent enough to make it worth the money? And that's looking at exposures versus injury rates. So, from a sheer numbers standpoint, do we save enough by spending enough? Mm-hmm. The second factor to that is, how long does the tape actually hold up? And is it effective enough, long enough, to maintain that external ankle mobilization, essentially? Mm-hmm. You're trying to immobilize the joint, which, if you really look at it, the ankle should be a mobile joint anyway. So are we adding external immobility to something that is probably internally immobile because of ligamentous restrictions or what have you? But so the second pillar of that is, are we changing the joint kinematics with that ankle taping? The third thing is whether or not taking an external support actually does change that inside thing. So there's really three different pillars of the research right now that look at whether or not the ankle taping is effective.
So essentially, I mean, it's, you're essentially looking at it from a business perspective. What's your return on investment? You're looking at it from a kinematic standpoint in terms of, you know, where are the forces, you know, if the forces are not occurring at the talocrural joint, or, you know, when we look at inversion, eversion, plantar flexion, dorsiflexion, you know, supination, pronation, if it's not happening there, it's got to be translated somewhere else. So, you know, you would probably go up the fibula and say you'd probably see some things like a ski boot fracture. And then the third question is, if it's not being moved up those different anatomical landmarks, then where does it have to go internally? And what kind of proprioceptive or mechanoreceptive properties are happening?
Right. And there are a few researchers out there looking at ACL rates with ankle taping or bracing. And what they're finding is that most of the people who are tearing their ACLs in either contact or non-contact sports have some sort of external ankle bracing.
Interesting. Interesting.
So okay. It's the force has to go up the chain somewhere.
That's the greatest thing. You know, this is a shout out to Dr. Mark Knobloch, our clinical coordinator, who's teaching the research class. Dr. Knobloch's world, you know, revolves around, what does the evidence show us? You can't just tell me this is what you think you saw, or this is what I've seen over the years. You got to show me in terms of numbers. What does this show us? And that's why that evidence-based, you know, continuing education unit was put back in.
Yep, and we can't forget all three pillars of the evidence-based practice. It's research, it's clinician experience, and it's patient values. Yep. So
absolutely.
Don't forget all three of them.
Yep. Okay, sorry, I keep on interrupting this line of questioning.
That's okay.
Jeremy keeps on giving me looks.
No, that's not,
because we got to stay on track for the BOC continuing education units.
Is that why he's not on camera? Because he's giving you weird looks the whole
time?
Yeah,
he's making all sorts of gestures at me.
Well, no, it improves the the value if I'm not on camera. So I do have a pretty cool looking shirt, you know, got my fishing shirt on, but no, they're good. I mean, that's why we bring you guys in here, to talk to the young professionals and potentially other, you know, future young professionals, that some of these students may be athletic trainers. So it's really cool to hear you guys about what you're doing currently. Brett, I'm definitely gonna have to get with you. One of the people I'm talking to in a couple weeks creates a product called Ankle Roll Guard. So it's an external bracing, and so it'd definitely be good to have you on there in that conversation. But Mike, you actually you said something about you had to resign a position in the, whatever they call it, IAT, Iowa's Athletic Trainer Association, or something like that, right?
Yeah, so for the previous year and a half, I was the Region 4 rep on the Illinois Athletic Trainers Association Young Professionals Committee. Region 4 encompassed basically all of Southern Illinois. It went to Springfield, which is right in the middle of the state. It's our state capital, although Chicago people don't recognize it as the state capital, but, you know. And being from Missouri, Brett, you understand that a little bit, or haven't been at Missouri State?
I understand it very
you know
well.
What, you know what I love about it is that the more he talks about Illinois, the thicker his accent gets, you know. It's the state capital.
It's just like St. Louis people don't recognize Jefferson City as the state capital in Missouri.
Hey, St. Louis people don't recognize Southern Illinois as existing, so, but anyway.
Well, I'm just, I was going to say Salukis. Go Salukis. All right, go ahead.
But,
Southern Illinois there. University. Salukis. Go ahead. Sorry.
SEMO hates them, but that's okay. So I left that position after about a year and a half. Because obviously when I made the move to Texas, and that was a conversation that I had with Jordan Anderson, who is the committee chair. He's up in the Chicago area. And basically he was trying to convince me to find my replacement for like the last 4 months since I was looking for a job. But, as of right now, I don't believe they filled that position.
So tell me a little bit more about, you know, you're talking to, you know, a couple entry-level master's degree students, right? And they've got some undergraduate degrees, and now they're in this professional program. So I want you to continue to elaborate on the importance of getting involved as a young professional. And this is both to Brett and to Mike.
Take it away, Mike.
So, you know, I think it's very important that we get involved as our young professionals, you know, because eventually we're not going to be the young professionals anymore. We're just going to be professionals and, and be a part of that majority of the profession who, I think they say the NATA has 39,000 athletic trainers or something like that. And, it's important that we are active in our profession just in order for us to grow. We can't just have our select few that are involved, in the professional organization because they're not going to get anywhere. You know, we have to work from that grassroots level and continue to build every single day.
And so what are some of the things that you learned, right? Because everybody says, I want to get involved, or everybody says, how do I get involved? Or everybody says, where do I get involved? So what are some of the pearls of wisdom that you guys have?
Be careful. Sometimes you can be far too controversial and, people don't like to be necessarily challenged at a national, state, or district level. And for better or worse, I'm kind of the challenging guy. And I like to ask why a lot. And I think that as young professionals, the only way we're going to really advance athletic training in the future years is to be a little bit controversial and ask why. Why are we still spending time on some of the same initiatives at the national level that were started in the early 90s that haven't moved forward at all? I want to know why we're still pumping money into those things. I want to know why we haven't changed our course of action, or why we haven't, you know, why was it this last year that we updated our head injury policy or national, what do you want to call it? Position statement. That's the word. Yeah. Why did we, buy students? I guess that's what that means.
I'm high fiving all of them. Air high five. That's what you saw. Air high five, everybody.
I want to know why it took us 11 years to update something like that when that's the number one thing in the media right now and one of the top catastrophic injuries. Mm-hmm. So you need to ask why, but be careful doing it.
You know, one of the things
not everybody's receptive.
Yeah, one of the things that it's been sitting in my head now for a while, and I brought this up last week to Shannon Leftwich, was I'm going to write an article and submit it to the NATA. It could be the NATA News, but I want to entitle it called The Shark Tank, right? So I don't know if you guys have ever seen that show, The Shark Tank, but essentially If I go up as an athletic trainer and I'm sitting in front of these investors, and we'll use another word for investors and call them the public, you know, what makes athletic training unique, and how can we as athletic trainers separate ourselves from other like professions? And not saying that we need to take anything away, but that we need to be included in that, in the roundtable discussion amongst other like professions. And when we have stagnation within the profession, whether that's going to be about policies and procedures, whether that's going to be about initiatives that have been sitting on the table for 15, 20 years, whether that's going to be, you know, the educational debate that's going on, whether that's going to be, you know, where are we going to stake our claim in terms of patient population, et cetera, that's all fine and dandy. But when you sit in front of the public, or you sit in front of the investors, and you say, this is why athletic training needs to be a part of it, I always go back to the young professionals and I tell them, you know, I learned a lesson from, you know, I think he's a legend, Coach John Wooden. And essentially, you know, he taught his players to represent, you know, you're representing the UCLA basketball team, you're representing the university, but you're also representing the entire profession of basketball. And so when I, you know, and these guys have heard me say it a few times now, when you go out there, you're representing the MAT program, you're representing the University of Houston, you're representing the entire profession of athletic training. And so make sure that you're able to ask good questions, hard questions, make sure you can get the answers, but also create an environment where you can get people to buy into what it is that you need to happen so that we can all move forward together. You know, we again find ourselves in athletic training at a crossroads again. And so how are we going to inspire and empower these young professionals to get involved? Because you're right. And I think it was either Mike or Brett that said it, that, you know, at some point I'm 40 years old, and at some point I'm not going to be a young, I guess I'm not young anymore, but I'm just going to be a professional and I'm going to be at the tail end. And so it's going to be up to the young people to stand up and say, look, this is the direction we need to move in, and this is why.
Always remember, you can learn just as many tricks from the old dogs as the old dogs can learn from you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So let's keep on talking a little bit more. You know, the students are gone. We can. I'm hoping that Nicole and Will get a little bit more involved in this conversation, which is why we brought you here. Mm-hmm. And so what I'd really love to do, if it's all right with Jeremy, is to start to open up kind of this free-flowing dialogue of, you know, from Mike and Brett, what's important to you? You know, if you were going to hire Will and Nicole, what kind of things are you looking for? What kind of things do you expect out of the young professionals? What pearls of wisdom can you give to them? What do you see the future of athletic training being? So I'd kind of like to open that up, if that's okay with everybody.
Yep.
Okay. So, Nicole, we'll start with you.
What would you like me to ask?
You can ask anything you want.
Okay. So you were, Brett was talking about pretty much staying curious within the athletic training field. What are some of the top kind of topics do you think staying curious with athletic training should be?
Well, I think athletic training encompasses so many different realms that there are hundreds of things that you could be curious about. And you need to figure out which niche within athletic training that you are passionate about, to continue asking questions about. So based on your experience so far as a student and with some limited clinical experience, what do you find to be the thing that excites you most within your practice?
Okay, so kind of ask yourself that question, kind of what are you finding yourself more interested in?
Because
every day I'm learning something new. Right now I'm working with baseball,
okay.
So the shoulder's been really interesting to me,
okay.
But I could easily go to the ankle maybe next year.
Right now these guys, and Mike and Brett, you'll certainly understand it, they are drinking out of a fire hose right now.
Ah, really. Yes, I love the fire hose.
We've all been there, man.
I'm still doing it regularly.
Yeah. Hey,
every
listen,
day.
I have a lot of empathy for you. And the reason why is that, you know, when I was getting my doctorate, I was the program director, clinical coordinator, academic assessment coordinator at Southeastern Louisiana University. I was getting my doctorate, full-time program, you know, and I was still practicing for North Oaks Hospital. So I slept from 1 to 2 o'clock in the morning and wrote my dissertation from 3 to 6. Went to work from, 7 to 5, and I'm married with 2 kids. So when these guys come to me, oh my God, we're so stressed, Dr. Yellen, I have no sympathy for you.
Yes. You have to drink from fire hose daily. So the shoulder is what you're passionate about. So,
right now.
You know, there's a big group of researchers right now looking at what truly drives the shoulder from a rehabilitation standpoint. And it's long been thought by a lot of rehab professionals that, we need to work on the rotator cuff. Well, as it turns out, the rotator cuff in most throwing movement is merely doing nothing more than holding on for dear life. So training the rotator cuff as a prime mover in rehabilitation with your standard band internal and external rotation exercises, looking at whether that's truly effective or not. That's a question I would ask from a movement restoration and neurological perspective. Is that the best thing for our folks?
Right, and I've read a lot on how the posterior capsule and the shoulder has a major impact on a lot of impingement injuries in the shoulder, and just focusing on the capsule within itself and the shoulder. That's
absolutely
something to look at and consider other than just musculature such as the rotator cuff.
So yeah,
you've got a great baseball athletic trainer down there.
Sure do.
I'm going to go back to, and I agree with that last statement. I think Hodge does an amazing job. I'm going to go back to what Mike said. It's not a lot of times it goes back to who you know, right? It's what you know that gets you in the door, but it's who you know. So one of the guys that I went to undergrad with is a guy by the name of Dr. Kevin Lauder. And Kevin is, I believe, at Eastern Illinois University, and he is a front runner in shoulder stuff. So, Nicole, I did not know you were interested in that, and I can easily shoot an email out to Dr. Lauder and get you involved.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Hodge is an old friend.
I'll let him know you said hi.
He's my mentor.
Excellent.
He's a great guy.
Mentors are important to have.
Absolutely.
Especially as a young professional. In fact, I was texting with one of mine who was my clinical instructor for women's gymnastics at SEMO. So that's, we're going back 4 years, and I was texting with her this morning, actually, and she and I text back and forth probably once a week. Mm-hmm. So really important to develop those relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you always have those people to lean on.
Yep. I would agree with that. I have some mentors that, have been either in the athletic training profession, athletic training education, or the sports medicine field, probably about as long as I've been alive. And so I make sure that I touch base with these guys about once a week, and we just talk and we, explore ideas. And, sometimes, obviously, putting together this new program at UH, I'll throw out some questions and they'll throw out some answers. And it's really nice to have some people that have been at this for a while that can guide you, and they really care about your success.
Mm-hmm. They also have a unique ability to decloud your passion sometimes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we can get very passionate and excited about certain things and kind of narrow our focus. And mentors and experienced professionals have a unique ability to say, yeah, but did you think about this?
Yeah. That's not the rabbit hole you want to go down.
Right? Yeah.
Will, do you have a question?
Sure. Before I ask my question, I just want to say how reassured I am to hear Brett say that he's still learning every day and drinking out of the fire hose, because, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I don't want a job that I can, or a career that I can master in 6 months. I want to learn something new every day for the rest of my life. So I'm glad to hear you say that. And my question is for Mike. And Mike, we actually have something in common, because I graduated from Bishop Lynch. Yeah, back in 2007. So is Bill Persinger still the head coach?
He is not.
Oh, he left?
I guess he got shown the door a couple years ago.
Oh.
I don't know those details.
Okay.
Ben Dash, Coach Dash is the head coach.
Oh, Coach Dash. Okay, Dash is still there. Awesome. So my question is, because I'm interested in the secondary level, what would you say is the hardest part or hardest parts of your job, and what are some of the things you do to mitigate some of the problems that you experience on a daily or weekly basis?
The hardest part that I'm currently dealing with, and I was getting yelled at on Twitter the other day for it, is that work-life balance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's something that I've struggled with and I will probably continue to struggle with. My clinical coordinator at SEMO, Dr. Mahalan, told me one time, she said, look, she said, you're not doing athletic training and you're not sleeping. Go do something else. Mm-hmm. Well, here I am 5 years later, still trying to figure that out. But at the secondary school, you know, and Will, you understand that we got 750 athletes here at BL. So, right. It's very busy. And even with the addition of an assistant, and we've added an assistant through Baylor Institute for Rehab this year, part-time. You know, it's still very time-consuming, and so finding that work-life balance, but also just finding the time to give your kids one-on-one attention, you know, is still very important, and that can be very easy to miss, I think, when you are just that busy.
Mike, when you say, sorry to interrupt you, when you say kids, you're talking about the students at the high school, not your biological kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right.
Absolutely, the athletes.
Okay.
I don't have any kids. and I'm told that being a high school athletic trainer makes very good birth control. That's what I'm told. But, you know, Will, going back to your always learning comment, you know, I'll share a quote that one of my supervisors shared one time with us that came from my previous boss, was that you're either ripe and rotting, or you're green and growing. Mm-hmm. So if absolutely. You're not getting better, you're getting worse.
Yeah, sure. You're the right. I'm going to steal that from you. Every Friday, I send out a quote of the week, and it goes
That'd
to everybody. It goes to everybody involved in the program, all of our stakeholders, all of our students.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go find out who said that, and then I'm going to send that out as one of my quotes of the week.
There's a good quote on it's one of the Chad Starkey books. I think it's Examination of Orthopedic Injuries. It's always know what you don't know, and that's another good one that kind of resonates with me.
You know, along the lines of what Brett and Mike were talking about, I also had a couple mentors, and Mike, you know, one of those mentors taught me a great life lesson in terms of life balance. His name is Dan Bailey. Dan was the head athletic trainer at Long Beach State. And Dan, I think, died in 2008. And I was there in 2007 for the NATA meeting in Anaheim, California. And it was when Dan was retiring. He had been the head athletic trainer, I think, at Long Beach State for 36 years. And so I got a chance to sit with him and talk to, you know, with him and one of my mentors, Dr. Keith Friesman. I think together they were responsible for like 600 athletic trainers. The program had literally been handed to the two of them by Dr. Dan Arnheim, which is a name that we all know who that guy is. And I sat down with Dan and I said, you know, tell me you're able to look back on your career now. Tell me what you think. He said, you know, for 36 years, my wife and kids felt like the job came first. And, but that's not how I felt inside. And, I had a great run, and I'm excited to spend some time with my wife and kids, but I just have to get my knee replaced. And then, you know, he went in for an operation and unfortunately died on the table. And that stuck with me, obviously, from that point on to now. And it will probably resonate with me for the rest of my life, because every time I start to look at, you know, one direction or another, I take a step back and I learn a lesson from a guy like Dan, who says, you know, take a deep breath. And I would agree with your mentor that, you know, if you're not sleeping, you're not doing athletic training, what are you doing? And make sure that you have a really good life balance. Because ultimately, what I think that we are sometimes missing in this profession is that ability to say, hey, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to go do something else. It's okay to do something for yourself. And you still have some old school mentalities that say, you know, if you're not in that athletic training room at 4:30 in the morning, if you don't leave at 9:30 at night, then you're just not working. And I, you know, like Brett had said, I debate that theory. I ask why. You know, in today's time of technology, we should be able to work smarter, not necessarily, the time at the office doesn't make you great. It's your time being able to be great that makes you great. And if you can be more efficient taking advantage of some other technologies that we have today, by all means, go do it.
To tag on to that, that's the work-life balance is the primary reason that I started my own company. During my graduate assistantship in the spring of 2013, I went January 4th to June 8th without a single day off, yep, averaging about 90 to 95 hours a week. And obviously that's full-time master's student transitioning into full-time doctoral student with an in-season collegiate sport and everything else, but that's still completely unnecessary in today's world. And there's no reason that as an athletic trainer, you should have to marry your job. And that's, I think, one of the biggest pitfalls of the profession is for years and years and years, we have been there at every beckoning call. And that is a mentality that has to change with our generation. Mm-hmm. And I started my company so that I could, well, for two reasons. One, so that when I want to take the time, I can take the time. And two, so that I have the time to put into my doctoral studies and get that thing done so that I can really start out in a good professional career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all those things. You know, I debate quite a bit. Hey, look, athletic training, we're going to follow the medical model. We need to follow the medical model all the way around. You know, let's say you have a group of physicians. So if I take our UH athletic training room, we have 6 full-time athletic trainers. We have 6 full-time post-professional graduate students, right? And then we have 13 entry-level MAT students that are in that room. And so you have quite a bit of knowledge and expertise that are in that room all at one time. If I follow the medical model and I say, okay, I have a group of physicians, and let's just say I take the 6 or the 12 practicing athletic trainers in that room, not all 12 have to be there at the same time. And if you're in season and if you're out of season, if you're post-season, whatever it is, you should be able to dictate your time. One of the training rooms that I've seen that does a phenomenal job at this, and they're all really good friends of mine, is LSU's athletic training room. I think Jack Marucci is a great leader, and he's had some, great success with people like Sean Eddy and Shelly Molinex and, some other people that have been able to work with him. And the reason why is because they found that work-life balance. So, Nicole, Will, do you guys have some more questions for Mike and Brett?
I have one more question. So what's some advice that you can give all of the master programs to try to help us not burn out within the program so soon?
Everybody's tired, man. They're just...
Hey, it's a good question.
Yeah.
It was once described to me, if you're not ready to beat your head against the wall or cry at least every other day during your graduate studies, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
and as a full-time student still, I agree with that. If you're not putting in the time that you need to absorb everything you need to right now, it's gonna bite you later. At the same time, you need to find a way to, when it's not time to do athletic training or study or be in class, don't think about it. Mm-hmm. Get away from it. Don't go hang out on campus just to hang out on campus. You know, I quit late in my undergraduate going to other athletic events just to be a spectator and fan, because inevitably I would find myself, okay, it's the end of the game. Oh, look, here are all my friends. let me help them tear stuff down, mm-hmm. clean stuff up, because then we can go do something else quicker. Just don't be there at all. Mm-hmm. And make sure you take the time for you. At the end of the day, nothing you do in your academic program is going to benefit you in the coffin. So live it up so you don't
that's great.
So you don't get to the coffin quicker.
Yeah.
That's good advice.
Quote of the week right there.
You're getting all sorts of quotes today.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement that and I hope, this is a chance for you guys to evaluate me in the program, I suppose. But, you know, I hope one of the things that you guys have heard me say a few times is don't lose your individuality. Right? If you don't have to be here, don't be here. Some people interpret that as, well, you know, you're not a company person, or, you know, you're not supporting the cause because you're not here all the time. No, as a matter of fact, I am doing more than that because I need to be able to go take a break and recharge and make sure that, you know, my personal self is taken care of. Because if I'm doing okay, you know, if Nicole Kasha and Will Ryan are operating 100%, well, you know what? Then their studies operate 100%. Their patient load operates at 100%. Their preceptors are happy with what they're doing. And, you know, they get more experiences and they have more opportunities when they get out.
Yeah, kind of. If you're able to take care of yourself, you're able to take care of the athlete. But first you have to make sure you're at your best to be able to give your best.
Yeah,
absolutely. And if you look at there's a lot of people that recommend that you only study for really hard for about 15 minutes at a time and then take a 15 to 30 minute break. It's no different than your professional practice. If you, it's the 80-20 rule, you know, 80% of the benefit comes from 20% of the time put in. Mm-hmm. So make sure that your 80% of benefit, and the 20% of time is most effective.
Will?
Sure. I have a question for Brett. I know you talked about some of the things that, you know, maybe you wouldn't mind seeing ATs do less, you know, such as, you know, maybe, you know, taping less ankles or whatnot. Where do you see the world of athletic training in 10 years and where do you, or what areas do you want to see ATs do, more of or less of, or, you know, something in between?
Well, by trade, we're the only ones that have a pillar of our profession as injury prevention, and I think it is the most forgotten practice domain, and I think it's the one that in general we do the worst. So I would like to see us come back on the emphasis of injury prevention. And injury prevention, as I'm finding with this ankle stuff, is not just wrapping up one joint so that it blows out another one. That's not helping anybody. So turning it back to a corrective model of fixing problems before they happen. Mm-hmm. There are obviously contact and collision injuries. You can't prevent them. You can try to lessen the blow of them with padding or technique, but you can't prevent them. The ones that are preventable are the kid who's out on the mound pitching and he throws and his elbow snaps. There's no reason that we should have the quote Tommy John epidemic that we have. And a lot of that goes back to fundamental movement and the fact that our kids just don't move well and they don't have the proper neurological control of their bodies. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see us get back to a point of fixing the fixable before something happens. And some would argue if it's not broke, don't fix it. But obviously something is broken because we keep having ridiculous amounts of injuries. You know, with looking at the expenditures in the U.S. last year for genres of medical care, intuitively you hear the most about cardiac care, and it was almost $300 billion less was spent on cardiac care than orthopedic care in 2013 in the United States. So orthopedic care by far costs more money than anything else. And as orthopedic professionals, we've got to fix that.
I 100% agree with you. And
one thing, sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
One thing, you know, and Brett, remind me, I believe you're FMS certified. Is that correct?
Yes.
Functional movement screen? Okay. And I am as well. And so I think that's a great tool that we can use. And that was actually my capstone project for my master's degree. Like I said, my master's was in pediatric sports medicine. And my capstone project was high school cheerleading injuries and the use of the functional movement screen as an injury predictor. Hmm. You know, and much of that research was done in the NFL originally. And so, but I do think that the FMS or similar tools like it, can be beneficial, not only for this injury predictor idea, but also, you know, FMS encompasses the corrective exercises and things like that. But just looking at the biomechanics of the athlete or of our patients in general, you know, and working to correct those things, and rather than taping the ankle, hey, why don't we fix the knee or mm-hmm. fix the hip, and maybe the ankle's going to operate better, or vice versa. Okay. But then also, here at Bishop Lynch, we are actually a part of a research study out of Ohio State University that is called the Functional Pre-Participation Exam. And I have not yet gotten fully into that yet. One of the researchers is actually coming out in middle of next month to help me test our soccer and basketball players. We did football this fall, and then we'll do basketball and soccer as well. You know, and then so we test them on three different tests, functionally test them, and then we'll use that again, tracking that those injuries. You know, that way maybe down the road we need to be looking at adding to our pre-participation exams that, let's be honest, are fairly weak, and they're a piece of paper to cover our rear ends, okay? But what good is the pre-participation exam if you can go to any doc in the box around the corner and get signed off for your sports for the year? So, you know, Ohio State's logic here is looking at this from a movement standpoint of preventing those injuries. You know, like Brett said, it is a weakness that I think our profession and our industry, you know, as a medical industry, we fail at that preventative side. You know, and I tell people all the time, it's domain number one for mm-hmm. a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, athletic training, whenever I talk to people about athletic training, I always tell them, we're the only medical profession that specializes in prevention. We're also the only medical profession that specializes in prevention and combines that with the other, I think it's the third domain of immediate care. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our job is to be able to prevent as many injuries as possible. And you're starting to see athletic training transition from, you know, a lot of people get upset when I call it the traditional setting of sports and into some other areas. For instance, one of my duties here at UH is I work with the Astronaut Strength Conditioning and Rehabilitation Program at NASA, where I'm with two other athletic trainers and a strength coach. And 99% of what they do is prevention. You're looking at biomechanics, X-Phys, you know, motor learning. We're implementing functional movement screen as well as some other things to make sure that these occupational athletes can sustain activity over a lifetime. And I would agree, we need to be able to focus a little bit more on prevention. And that is one of the things that I think separates us from other like professions. Nobody else is trained to do that. And we need to make sure that we are constantly promoting that. And I think it goes back to something that Brett said earlier was, if we can take some time on the front end and prevent these injuries from happening, we don't have to spend equity in terms of time, money, and resources to prevent it on the back end. Obviously, you can't prevent these catastrophic injuries from happening. You know, a kid tears his ACL, a kid gets a C-spine injury. Sometimes those can't be prevented, but sometimes they can. And if we didn't do what we need to do on the front end to prevent those from happening, then we're doing ourselves, our profession, and our patients a disservice.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's an ongoing conversation that we're having here at BL. Like I said, we're a part of that research, which I think is phenomenal. You know, and that's something that when I was going through the interview process, they told me that you're going to do that. And I said, okay. You know, like I said, my capstone was based on that in cheerleading. So it's like, hey, let's spread this out here. But we also, we do have a full-time strength coach here at BL, and he and I have talked a little bit about, you know, about things, and he was shocked when I told him that I wanted to be in the weight room with them mm-hmm. and be a part of the weights program. And he goes, and he's been at it for 42 years or something like that. He tells me all the time.
Square jaw, flat top, hands as thick as, you know, my thighs. Do I got it right?
That's about accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Never met the guy. Just pretty much.
But you know, he told me, he goes, I've never had a trainer tell me that he wanted to be in here. He goes, you always say you don't have time, but it's, you know, it's one of those. I told him, and now that I have an assistant, it'll make it a little bit easier to build that time in. But again, I'd much rather spend time in that weight room, helping them on the front end, preventing it. So that I'm not dealing with it in my athletic training room,
right.
Which is too small,
right.
On the back end.
So let me ask both Brett and Mike a question. You know, part of the infrastructure of this program that we put together is that we have a separate strength conditioning class that is really designed around the NSCA guidelines. And my hope is that when these students go through our program that, you know, obviously they're going to graduate with a master's degree in athletic training. They can sit for their national boards, which will lead to their state licensure. But I also want them to take that CSCS exam. I also want them to get exposed to some NASM, PES, CES type things, FMS certifications, etc. What's your thought on that? You know, somebody comes out with the alphabet soup. Does that make them more or less marketable, you think?
Well, I think it makes you an informed consumer. I think that you need to have pretty significant knowledge in all the different areas in order to talk the talk and walk the walk with other professionals. I think that just your athletic training knowledge alone is sufficient for what you need to do as a professional. However, it's easier to communicate with other people if you know where they're coming from. And by knowing where they're coming from, I mean going through those other courses. So I've been through a lot of that information. I don't necessarily hold the credentials yet because, well, that costs money.
Right.
you know, I'm signed up to actually sit for the CSCS exam in a couple weeks. And then hopefully next spring sometime I'll be able to do the PES and CES as well. But I think in order to really be a well-versed professional, you need to have that knowledge, whether you have the letters behind your name or not.
Right.
I mean, when it comes down to it, once I have the knowledge in all the areas that I want to, I think I counted up at like 58 letters behind my name, and that's just ridiculous. And it drives me nuts when people list out 100 certifications behind their name, because to me that says one of two things: either you're really nerdy and really smart, or you really don't have a clue what you're doing and you just put a bunch of letters behind your name. So take it with a grain of salt, but I definitely think you need to have that extra information.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Josh, I'm going to go back, you know, again, you and I met in 2010 at the CETA Student Symposium, mm-hmm. and one of the things you talked about, and I'll be honest, I don't remember much of your talk or any of those talks.
Thanks.
But the one but the one thing that did come out, and I know you and I emailed back and forth after that, you know, that same semester,
uh-huh.
was figuring out where your goals were. You know, what do you want your name to be?
Right.
Right? And I went and I wrote that down, and I think I still have it on one of my computers. You know, what credentials I wanted. And obviously, the BOC certification was priority number one. Then that master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've achieved both of those. But then the CSCS was on there as well, because I do believe that's important in our profession. You know, being able to correlate with the strength conditioning coaches, and in certain industries, like I was told in professional baseball, basically if you don't have the CSCS, you're probably not going to get hired. So whether the letters themselves are all that important could be debated all day long. But I do think it's crucial that we get that information and have a broader base of where we are at, so that we're not just, you know, throwing out exercises on our treatment table and going from there. Because right. How does that correlate? And that's one of the emphasis that I've tried to put into my rehabilitation programs is, how are these exercises preparing this kid, this athlete, to go back to his or her sport?
Right.
Because in what sport do they lay on a table? They don't. Right. You know, and so whether the letters are important or not, I think, is debatable. But, you know, gaining that knowledge. And so like you said with your strength conditioning course being based on the NSCA book, I think that's a very good decision. I think that's a very wise opportunity for the students. And we actually had that at SEMO. We had a class just like that as well.
You know, when I was in graduate school, I came across a strength coach that relied heavily on some hammer strength equipment. And one day I walk into his strength room and he's soldering off the seat of the hammer strength bench press. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he says, I'm soldering off the seat, and next I'm taking off the back support. And I said, why? He says, well, my job is to, you know, we're having some issues with the defensive and offensive linemen, and I want to be a little bit more functional in the training. And I said, okay. He said, and he brought up exactly what you talked about, Mike. He says, okay, well, I'll hit the nail on the head here for you. How many times do you see a football player, you know, offensive defensive lineman on their back lifting 225 pounds 40 times? I said, never. He said, right. What they're doing is that they're standing in a certain position and they're using their core and they're using their forward flexors to move people out of the way. So I need to be able to duplicate that in how I train them. And that was, I mean, we're talking, you know, 15 years ago now. But that was one of the first times that I came across the concept of functional training. And from that point on, I kind of took that and thought, oh, that's really interesting. And I started to see these examples, exactly what you were talking about, Mike, in terms of functional training. How do I take, how do I make, okay, you know, the rehabilitation process, that's fine. We're going to rehabilitate a rotator cuff or an ankle or whatever it is. But then how do I make that translational into what this person needs to do for their job, whether that job is as an athlete, whether that job is a postal worker, as an astronaut, at, you know, at we talked to Webb Miranda at United Airlines and some of the baggage handlers. So how do we make that transition? And just knowing the information is not enough. Knowing how to apply it is where you need to be.
And I come at it from a slightly different approach of, I don't look at what's functional for those people. I look at what makes them dysfunctional and what they want to do. You know, if you look at the Webster's Dictionary definition of functional, there's a whole bunch of different things that wrap into what you may or may not be able to do. But if you look at dysfunctional, it's can't do something. And I think that's much easier to define than what functional training is.
Interesting. Well, any more questions from Nicole and Will?
I have a question.
Yeah,
go ahead. So we're talking about, I've read quite a bit on bringing the sport into the gym. We're talking about functional exercises. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Freddie Roach, but he's Manny Pacquiao's boxing trainer. Manny Pacquiao, you know, he's punching hundreds of times a day. And what Freddie Roach does after that is he trains the antagonist of that punch. So he does some bent over rows, back exercises. So I guess what I'm asking is it a good idea to bring the sport into the gym because of, you know, overuse mechanisms? You know, let's take a baseball pitcher, for example. You know, every time he throws on that follow through, he might, you know, like Nicole said, compress that posterior capsule, you know, is it a good idea to bring the sport into the gym, or what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Two thoughts there, Will. First of all, I think it's a great idea from a psychological aspect. Okay. And remember, we have to not only treat the patient from a dysfunctional standpoint physically, but we also have to prepare them psychologically to go back to their sport.
Right.
Because if they got injured in their sport, maybe they're going to be scared of going back to doing their activity. Okay, so that's my first thought. I do believe it's important from that perspective. And number two is, you know, okay, so we talk about throwing wrong, or we talk about this or that and these overuse injuries. But is it truly the overuse that is causing these injuries, or is it the dysfunctional overuse like Brett mentions? Mm-hmm. And if we can do it correctly, they won't have that pain. And they won't suffer that overuse. That's my thought.
I completely agree. Yogi Berra once said, baseball is 90% mental, the other half is physical. Yeah. And that can go with any sport. Since we're on a quote day here.
He also said you're not supposed to think and hit at the same time because hitting's that difficult.
That's true. What time is it? You mean now?
Yeah.
Yeah, Yogi Berra, classic.
Yeah.
I agree with that. It's all about making sure the dysfunction is taken care of. And you have to translate that to sport at some point. However, many traditional weight rooms feed dysfunction. And so if you're bringing sport movement into a dysfunctional setting, you're going to make things worse. Stacking strength on top of dysfunction only magnifies dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So if done in the right setting, yes, bring sport in. If it's not, I wouldn't compound the bad forces.
Hmm. All right, I want to change directions here just for a second. You know, I want Brett and Mike, I want you to give Will and Nicole, you know, three things that you think are important for their success in this profession. We've bounced around a lot of different topics here, but I want you to give them three things that you think are important. And also keep in mind that, you know, we are Brett and Nicole represent more than likely this new wave of athletic training where, my prediction, and I may be wrong, but I don't think I am, that I think that we are moving in the direction of an entry-level master's degree. So they're representing this new wave of athletic training students coming out. So what are three things that, as a young professional, you think they need to know, and three things that they can hold on to for the rest of their career and go back and constantly benchmark against your recommendations?
Look for the golden nuggets. Okay. You're going to pan through a lot of rocks, before you really find what you're good at, what you're interested in within the profession. You need to be good at everything, but really hone in on those golden nuggets that you find that you're really good at, really passionate about, and run with it. I find that if you do things that excite you and interest you, everything else will come. So if that's, you know, for me, it's the movement sciences and looking at function or rather dysfunction. And then everything else clinically built around that. Number two would probably be humility. You don't know everything. You will never know everything. And don't be afraid to ask questions. There's always somebody that's going to know more than you, and there's always somebody who's going to have experienced something that you have never experienced. Number three would probably be stay thirsty, my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
You know, I think along the same lines there with that golden nugget, it's kind of where I take that, is finding your passion. And recognizing that passion may change. Okay, you know, as students, that's probably going to change. Okay, you know, one of the things that I've talked about was when I was in college at SEMO, my first clinical opportunity was college football, and I was thrilled because I thought I wanted to work college football the rest of my life, right? And I loved it. I really did. I really did. But then the very next semester I was at a local high school and I loved it at the high school, you know, and so like Nicole said, pretty much I have enjoyed most of the opportunities I've had at some point in time. But what I figured out my first year out of school, because I graduated in December, and so you know, originally my idea was, hey, I'm going to go work for 4 months and then go to grad school. And I had an offer to actually go study with Dr. Loudner. Mm-hmm. He was at Illinois State at that time. I don't know if he's still there or not.
It may be Illinois State or maybe Eastern Illinois. I don't know.
I think it's Illinois State.
Yeah, it could be Illinois State.
You know, I had an offer to go work college football, right? Which is where I said I wanted to be. But what I figured out was that the high school level was where I really wanted to be at, just in those 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then, so I sat a year, didn't go to grad school and kept working and, came back around. I said, okay, I'm going to grad school. Had a couple college offers. One of them was down here in Lamar University, down here in Texas. But again, and what I ended up telling Dr. Mahalan was, these kids were no longer athletes. They were my athletes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I had found that passion. So that's why I did my master's work at USF, in pediatric sports medicine. If you would have asked me in college, I was going to work college football. Now I love the football and I love working the high school football, and especially down here in Texas. We all know how that is. But my passion is the female adolescent athlete. Everybody laughs at me, but that's my passion, and that's where I found my best, you know, success. So number one is find your passion. You know, number two is like Brett said, recognize you don't know everything. You know, Woody Hayes once said, and here we go again with another quote. And I'll paraphrase for you. I wasn't always the smartest person in the room, but nobody was going to outwork me.
Yep.
And, you know, I have always felt that way. Nobody's going to outwork me. And third is be decisive. You may not always know the answer, and that's okay. But be decisive. Okay? I think that it's important, and I think that's something that young professionals struggle with, and I've certainly done so. When you think something is wrong, go with it. If that's what your training and your knowledge is telling you, go with it. If the doctor tells you you're wrong later, that's okay. Right? You know, but I think that sometimes young professionals are afraid to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And actually that can be bad for the athlete, bad for the patient, and bad for your career because you're not learning from it. So I think it's okay to make mistakes.
Especially right now as students, make them loud, make them proud. You've got somebody there to save you.
Yeah, that's right.
If you screwed up.
You know, one of the things I've talked to them about is that, and we've talked about this a few times. If you're going to fail, I want you to fail here. And I told them from day one of the angles that I'm going to take is that I'm going to find out what your weaknesses are, then I'm going to exploit them. Because I've got 2 years to close the gap on that. So that when you come out, Hopefully we've strengthened those areas up, and you won't present some of those weaknesses when you get out in clinical practice. And then if you are going to fail, I want you to fail here, because you do have a safety net. You've got myself, you've got our clinical coordinator, Dr. Knobloch, you've got, you know, 6 athletic trainers at UH, you've got some post-professional master students, not to mention all the incredible preceptors we're surrounded by that are there to help you and build you and explain, you know, why we're doing this and help you move into another direction if you need to. And on the other thing that I ask them to do is constantly think about what's your next step. You know, you've got 2 years here. And when you leave here, don't let this be the highlight of your career. Let this be the springboard that gets you to where you want to be. And in order to do that, and I think, Mike, it goes back to what, you know, our interaction in 2010. Have some vision. Write down on a piece of paper what your goal is, and then try to start to work backwards. How are you going to get there? If you can see yourself as the head athletic trainer of XYZ University, write that down and then post it somewhere. And so every day you think about it and start working your way backwards. How am I going to get there? What steps do I need to take to position me where I can make those moves that I want to make? And so I would agree with the three of you. I think passion is super important. I had some similar experiences where, like, I think the two of you, you know, my dad was a head football coach. I grew up on a football field. I wanted to be an athletic trainer at a, you know, Division I college or even the NFL. And I had some experiences where I got, you know, to teach in front of some people, and I got to see how an athletic training program is run from the inside out. And what that forced me to do is take a step back and reevaluate and reanalyze what I wanted to do with my career. And eventually, if I look back, you know, 20 years, boy, am I glad I made those decisions. Because ultimately, what that allowed me to do is get some of those experiences that led to the position that I have now. And so I would agree, passion is important. And the other one, I would also agree with Brett, you know, those golden nuggets, constantly search. And then, you know, I love that quote from, I think it's a Dos Equis commercial, stay thirsty.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
Yeah, I don't always, I love that. I love that. You know, something that also presents itself that's really unique, you know, Mike, and you and I met briefly, Brett, you and I have never met, but in athletic training, and it goes back to something that Mike talked about earlier, this is a profession, and I'm assuming that all professions are like this, but this is about personal and human relationships. Whether that's a personal and human relationship with somebody that you want to get a job with, whether that's a personal and human relationship with one of your patients, your colleagues, etc. And here's the connection that I'm going to make. But one question for you, Mike. I'm not familiar with your university or your high school. Is it close to Arlington?
Not really.
Okay.
About an hour.
The reason why I was going to say is that, you know, you've got Paul Krawitz at UT Arlington. Is Baylor close to where you are, or no?
Baylor. Waco's 2.5 hours. Wait,
yeah, I, you know, listen, yeah. My knowledge of Texas is in Houston. That's it. But
that's still better than mine.
Yeah, but the connection or the point of me saying this is that, you know, right off the bat, Mike and I, you know, you and I have some similar connections. Right off the bat, Will and Mike have a connection of being at the same high school. Right off the bat, Brett and Nicole have a similar connection that you both know Hodge. Right off the bat, we've had some similar experiences where we've all revolved around some of the same people or some of the same experiences. And so part of your success in this profession is making sure that you remember these experiences, making sure that each person you come by has something to share with you. And each person you come by, it's like that, I don't know if anybody's read the book, The Alchemist, but each person or each experience you come by is a message to you of which direction you're supposed to go or which direction you're not supposed to go. And to make sure that you hold on to those experiences and communicate with those people, because believe it or not, in the athletic training world, one door leads to the other that leads to the other that got you the job. Perfect example, you know, another example, I think, Mike, it was you that communicated with Kevin Laudner, isn't that right?
I had applied for grad school there, yes.
Yeah, and Kevin and I know each other from undergraduate, so I think it was at Kevin Bacon's 6 degrees of separation. And I, you know, in athletic training, I say there are 3 degrees of separation.
Maybe three.
Yeah, I can. And, you know, that's the other thing I say, you know, as a young professional, you know, over the last decade or so, I've hired faculty and staff and graduate students. And I always tell them, you know, obviously you're going to apply and I'm going to see your letters of recommendation and I'm going to see your references. And then the question I'm going to ask you is that, is there anybody on or off this sheet that I cannot communicate with? Because not only am I going to call your references, maybe I'll call one of them, but I'm going to go find the people that know those people that more than likely know something about you. And I'm going to go look at those different types of activities. And I want to find out what kind of person you are. And in today's time, I think, you know, these young professionals need to understand, you know, I'm going to date myself a little bit. When I was an undergraduate going through my program, Netscape, you know, phone dial-up was just starting. So we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Instagram. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Google. We didn't have any of that. What we had was, you know, what happened in the athletic training room stayed in the athletic training room. But now all it takes is one faulty picture. It takes one bad decision. It takes one bad recommendation. And not only are you all over Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat or whatever it is that you're using now, but you're all over Google and YouTube, and you're going to be the joke for the entire country to see, to say, don't do that. Don't be like that. And on top of it, whenever I saw something like that, you know, whether it was a student that was applying to our program or whatever it was, I was very honest with them. Please, I don't like the way that this person is representing your company or your program, and I don't like the way that they're going to represent my company or my program. And by the way, don't send me any other students, because I've lost faith and confidence in your ability to put out a good product. So it goes back to, you guys have to understand, as young professionals, you not only are representing yourselves and the program and the university, but you're representing the entire profession of athletic training. And when one does well, we all do well. But you know what? When one does bad, we all do bad. So that's all I have to say about that. All
right. So since you're just talking about Twitter and Facebook, Mike, real quick, how did you meet Christy?
Can you? I don't think your mic is on, Jeremy. No,
we can barely hear anything.
I can't hear you.
We hear words, but we can't understand.
We can hear him mumbling. I mean, this is constantly with Jeremy Jackson. You know, that's what you hear most of the time. It really sounds like a Charlie Brown episode.
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, Mike, how did you meet Christy Messina?
Twitter.
All right, and she was pretty much crucial in your getting a job, right?
She was not.
She was not. I thought earlier you said that she was going to introduce you to those other guys.
Well, okay. So yeah, she introduced me to Dennis Hart, who did play. He and Mike Carroll both played an important role in me being where I am now, putting me in touch with Meredith, who was previously here. And actually I'd applied for a job at Christie's school as well, but you know, one of those things.
So again, your move from Texas, and actually I know you either tweeted me or direct messaged me, whatever, you know, saying, hey, I'm looking for a job. So then I would send you, whenever I saw a listing, you know, just send you that, because you were very active on Twitter. You were a positive voice. Like, I'm not going to send a job in my area to somebody that says, oh man, this job sucks, or, you know, I hate these things like that. But you were always, hey, what else can we do? What can we do better? I love athletic training. And, you know, like you said, you're finding the work-life balance. But you're very intentional and passionate about your voice for athletic trainers on social media, right?
Absolutely. You know, I have two phrases that I use a lot. The first one is, you know, I believe that every athlete deserves an athletic trainer. Okay, and so that's something that I actually picked up when I was blogging with Dustin Fink of the Concussion Blog, and I've picked up that, you know, that's my tagline. And actually that, I've taken that tagline a step further now. And the tagline on my signature on my school email here is, it says, every athlete deserves an athletic trainer. Every Friar athlete has one. You know, I think that's important that our parents recognize that and recognize how great that is, you know, and how, beneficial that is to them, you know, and to their athletes. Mm-hmm. And so I shortened that up for Twitter, since we're limited to 140 characters, to hashtag AT for all. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's become one of those things that it's a pretty popular hashtag that seems to me, I see on my, newsfeed constantly, but maybe that's just because it's full of athletic trainers, and like-minded people.
So if we're going back to Kevin Bacon, the 6 degrees of separation, obviously I met Brett at SWATA, and that's where, you know, we went from there, but I met you on Twitter. I've never really actually met you.
Right.
And so, using your AT for all, how do you think that's going to connect Nicole or Will in the future, just like Josh was saying, you know, the people that we met? So,
you know, people, you know, I have figured out that I know people in this profession all over the country. Hmm. In fact, you know, and Jeremy, you and I were talking briefly before, before we got started here today, about our trip to Chicago. Yes, I'm in Dallas, Texas, and we flew to Chicago for a high school football game earlier this month. Okay. And, you know, so I was tweeting about the trip and things like that. And I got a response from, I cannot remember his name now. And that's going to drive me nuts, but he's the head athletic trainer at NC State now, or the head football athletic trainer, something like that, tweeting us, you know, wishing us good luck. And he goes, I was Coach Dash's roommate in college. Coach Dash is our head football coach.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of those, you get to know people that you don't even realize you know, or how all of that connects, because it all connects.
Yep. Yep. Everybody's watching.
Yep. Yeah, just like you said.
And everybody sees it all.
Everybody's watching. Everybody's looking. All the time.
I have said things on Twitter that, you know, maybe were a little regretful, or, you know, maybe were a little bit negative. You know, I can specifically say, I can specifically say that, you know, a couple of years ago, I had said something about the KD, the King-Divick test, mm-hmm, on Twitter. And within a week, I actually got a phone call from one of the ladies at the King-Divick test. And she and I talked for a good 15 or 20 minutes. You know, so that's one of those things that she saw that on Twitter, or somebody saw that on Twitter, and she did a little bit of research and found where I worked and called me, you know, and we had a great conversation. I still don't use their product quite yet. They keep wanting me to, but, you know, just being able to interact in that way.
Yeah. Well, I think from our end, we got to shut this down, because we gotta get back to where, I mean, I want to be able to, I think this is really important. I think this is a topic that we need to continue. And I think it's probably one of the more important topics in the profession, young professionals be involved, professional development, you know, what's it going to take for us as a profession to be successful in the future? I would agree that it probably is not given the time that it needs to be given, because, you know, it's not blood and guts. It's not, you know, somebody's head rolling off their shoulders. It's not, you know, what everybody, you know, likes to talk about, but it's one of the more important things. And I think Brett would probably understand, owning his own company. You know, if you're not representing yourself, you're not representing your profession, you're not representing your product, then, you know, ultimately you're probably going to fail. And so this is something that I think we need to dedicate some more time to.
Yep. And I can't speak for Mike, but if you guys or any of your classmates want to talk anymore, it doesn't necessarily have to be on this sports medicine broadcast platform.
Oh, yes, it does. Platform. Oh, yes, yeah. It does. Yeah. No, we'll keep on.
Oh, well, sorry, Jeremy, but, Dr. Yellen, I'll certainly shoot you my contact information, or Jeremy can get us all in touch, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has, or start a dialogue.
You can certainly learn more about our Master of Athletic Training program at www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT, and that's where you can find all of our contact information.
And, been out there twice already during this broadcast.
Oh, really? What do you think of it so far?
Oh, it's a very nice website.
Thank
I
you.
Like it.
Thank you very much.
Very, very well put together.
Thank you.
Easy to navigate.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm very happy to hear that. I spent numerous days and weeks and months stressing over how would somebody view this website, and I'm glad that you said that.
Here's my controversial comment of the broadcast. Nothing irritates me more than going to a professional website and having to log in 3 times. Yep. Or click 13 times to navigate to one single page. Not that I'm going to name names, but yours is one of the better athletic training websites.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, all right. Dr. Yellen, I would agree. You know, hey, get in touch. You know, Jeremy's got my contact. You've got my contact. Will can easily get my contact since he's familiar with the Bishop Lynch website, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing that we have to recognize as young professionals and as students is there's always someone above us. There's always someone that knows more, and those people are willing to share that information. So reach out to them. You know, they may not be the most active person on social media or whatever it might be, but if you reach out to them, I have found most of them are willing to help you out. And so I think it's important, you know, not only on the mentee side of things for me, but I think it's also important that we as young professionals work to mentor these students. So definitely, you know, let us know what we can do to help.
Great.
Very good. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and close it out. We definitely want to thank everybody that makes this possible. So you, Twitter, I got to thank Twitter because that's how I meet Mike there, and he joins us. Skype. They let us do the video calls for free, but really I want to thank GHADS for making the CEU opportunity available and the dramatic change in quality between the last 2 years and this year is the addition of Dr. Josh Allen and Mark Knobloch and their expertise, and then obviously their Master of Athletic Training students. Matt Barnes came about 2 weeks ago, and now we got Nicole Kesha, right?
Yeah, all
right.
You got it.
And Will Ryan, so they're joining us here. And again, it just completely changes the dynamic, and I'm so thankful that you guys reached out to me and that we've been able to form kind of a partnership there. So I have the link to their website. What was that website again, Dr. Yellen?
www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT.
All right, so yeah, there's a link to that in there. We'd just like to throw that up there. And then as you see the beautiful, well, you can't see it right now, the beautiful backdrop behind Dr. Yellen, Nicole, and Will is from Memorial Hermann Southeast, so Bubba Wilson hooked us up with that. If you want to check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every single Wednesday we're live. You can follow us on Twitter, PHS Sports Med, Google+, Sports Medicine Broadcast, Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine crew, Nicole, Dr. Yellen, Will, Brett, and Mike, that's a wrap.